You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Doctors of Running podcast, where we, a group of doctors of physical therapy, talk about the art and the science of the things that we put on our feet. Today, I have the pleasure of talking with Dr. Salas, and we were going to talk about something completely different, and we started a conversation off air, and we're going to continue it onwards, because I think this is going to be really interesting. So our conversation today is going to be about super shoes. I know we talk about this a lot, but it's going to go a little more in depth and build off of one of the things we talked about a couple weeks ago, being, do you get the same training stimulus in super shoes? And how is that affecting athletes? How is that affecting us? So we're going to talk about how that might be affecting elites, how that might be affecting recreational runners, what that might mean, how to think about that from a training stimulus, just because this is the stuff we geek out on, and we want to just hear what you think as well. What we should also mention, should I tell them or should I wait till the end to tell people so they have to listen to the end to find out the special secret?
Ooh, thing. Special secret.
Yeah.
Let's do we'll find a convenient point in the middle.
Yeah, we'll find a few points. So stick around if you can handle us talking for that long. You'll find that we'll make it worth your time. So, Dr. Salas, where are you in your training right now? What sparked the initial part of this conversation? And our subjective, by the way, that we want you to talk about is, how have you felt with training shoes coming into your rotation, if they are, how has that impacted your training in terms of what have you been able to do with it? How do you feel like it's affecting your recovery? Very open-ended question, but how has it affected your training? So, Dr. Salas, what started this conversation? How did we get here?
Yeah, so essentially we wanted to see, with advancements in footwear, what is the impact on your body over the, plethora of distances that you can race? And how does that fit in a training cycle? How does that fit in recovery, et cetera, et cetera? And the reason why this all came about was I'm in the middle of a track season, so I'm going to be running a 5K here coming up this weekend, and I'm still trying to figure out myself if I want to run in flats or spikes.
Right.
And I'm not running world athletic standard, like world championships. I don't.
Me neither. You're faster than me.
I don't need to adhere to this.
I'm super excited to see what David can do because he's the fastest of the group, but I'm sending all my fast thoughts to you this season, but yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
But I don't really care about the 25 millimeter thing that went into effect, a couple of years ago. And truth be told, this is actually a very interesting question in and of itself. Because remember, before, people would race in either spikes, and some people did opt to run in flats. Were those flats over 25? Yeah. They might have been. I don't know.
Yeah, probably.
Like the Loon Racer or something like that. That was probably over 25.
And people ran the stack height.
Yeah, they ran in 10Ks in that, or 5Ks.
Oh, gosh.
So that would technically be an illegal shoe now. So anyways, that's completely besides the point. I was trying to figure out whether or not running economy. No, it's not. You got that up quick.
Per a previous site, it said that no longer exists, actually. The Nike Lunar Racer was 24 millimeters in the heel, 17 in the forefoot for a 7 millimeter drop. I don't know if that includes the insole or not, but dang, that felt so much.
I was going to say
one of those shoes that feel like, swear it was higher stack height, but it's probably lower than we really realized.
And it's probably a product of the times, because we were also running in these super minimal track spikes that who knows what the millimeter stack on that was.
Dude, I did a half marathon. I did several half marathons in the original Takumi Sens, which barely had anything there. Those would be a mile 5K shoe, not even now. And so
that just shows you how far we've come, right? To us,
so that answers that question.
It was very
track legal.
Yeah, I guess it was technically track legal. Yeah. So completely off the point. But trying to figure out, with running economy benefits, does that actually matter in a 5K, right? When you look at
or
running
below.
Or below, if you run you go and look at metabolic economy, running economy, the paces that you're doing at, in theory, are going to be somewhere around your marathon pace. And so let's say you are a super responder and you respond 6-7% to a given shoe. That's at your marathon pace, right? Like, things can completely change when the pace goes faster than that. And plus, in a controlled environment, you're not running in a straight line. You're doing constant left turns. And so does that change when you're running in a real life situation, trying to compete and go fast, you know, at a 5K, 10K distance? And I don't know if I fully know the answer to that. And that's kind of what sparked this. Mm-hmm. As far as like beneficial reactions, and like you could always make the argument like, oh, well, if you train your calves up, you'll just be fine in spikes, which is a fair argument. But at the same time, it's like, what's truly the better option?
Right.
And like, I don't actually know.
Right. Because what with super shoes, the benefits that we're talking about is the max stock height of a special foam, and emphasis on the special foam, because not everybody has seemed to figure that out, although most companies have. The special foam, the plate to stabilize that foam and direct forces, the geometry to make things efficient because the foam is so tall, and then obviously being on the lighter side. Now, I don't think there's a single super shoe on the market anyway that is that a true super shoe, not these like lower stack, you know, shoes that don't max out the everything and maximize the foams. There's some more like 5K, 10K flats out there, but, you know, they're not nearly as light still as all the track spikes. The track spikes are still in that like low 5 ounce, like 4 ounce range, maybe a teeny bit above 6 for one of them that.
Well, you have like the Saucony like Terminal VT is like high threes. Like,
yeah. And you're totally, right.
That is like feather light.
Right. So you have to remember that track spikes now have gotten a little bit higher stack. So they've got the cushion that takes the edge off. They have the stiffening agent still, which used to be more PBAX plates, and now we're starting to see more carbon. But the biggest benefit to them is that weight. And we know from evidence that as you go down in weight, things are more economical. To a certain point, right? If you're running barefoot, it's not economical, right? You have to have some cushioning there. But the question comes up is, when you go over these shorter distances, what's really beneficial? Having more cushioning and higher stack, or having that kind of more lower stack and that super lightweight plus the grip? And that's not something we mentioned on the podcast, is the traction from the spikes and the spike setup, which I'm sure someone studied that. I don't know next to anything about it.
I'm not going to lie. You go kicking in the track spike, you're going to feel a million times better than any super shoe on your foot.
Right.
That could be like the bottom of the bottom track spike. Like just your traction, like, and your ability to get onto the track and really grip and pull.
Yeah.
Like that's hard to beat that, you know?
Right. And I don't know how that affects. If anybody has experience with that, please comment below. I'm really curious. The only thing I know comes from my clinical experience was one of the – I forget what track spike it was. I think it was an old one that somebody was using, like one of the Air Kennedys or something. But it was one of the ones that was it's a distance spike that was missing a spike near the fifth met. When you turn, there was nothing stabilized. And I had two masters runners that came to me when I was at Casa Colina, and they were both having peroneal issues because when they tried to pivot off there was nothing to grip. So they ended up having to really pronate, and that put the peroneal muscles kind of in a better position to work, and they were overworking that, which was exacerbated by some calf weakness. So that just kind of forced where they were going. So I know you need to have an even spike distribution across the foot. I don't know anything else about that in terms of how that affects economy other than personal testimonial, like you said, where it's like it just feels better. And you mentioned that because you're the one – I'm not doing Trek split stuff right now, but spikes like feel so much better for pace changes.
Totally.
Like those distances.
And even in a 5K or 10K, like if you've run in a competitive 5K, 10K field, I know you have, but more for the viewers, like there's
it's been
a lot
long time.
Yeah. But there's a lot of jostling, right? Like there's a lot of like kind of stop go, like people are accidentally making contact with each other. Heaven forbid no one gets actually spiked. But like
it's very rare to have a consistent pace. Like, and it's not just that. It's people are aggressive. They're
and then you got to cover it, right? And like just anecdotally, like even in workouts, when I have been in spikes versus when I have not been in spikes, if someone makes some kind of a move where like you negative split 2-3 seconds on a lap, like that's a very noticeable change over 400 meters.
Yeah.
And like that being able to cover that move in spikes is so much easier than it is right. in flats. Like, it feels right. like in these super shoes, which I have worn on the track before, like, it feels almost clunky at first. Like, it yeah. almost is like you kind of have to figure that change in pace out. And then once you're yeah. up, you're okay. But, like, that little bit can actually impact how a race goes with how fast some of these moves are made. Like, you almost have to be, like, really, like, vigilant. I mean, we're talking if you're trying to, like, win races and be in it and be competitive. Obviously, if you're running consistent splits, you know, in a perfect world, it probably wouldn't matter as much. But as far as, like, being in context to the race in front of you, like, that can very easily happen.
Right. I definitely agree. I think I'm curious because spikes, right, you've got the spikes. They're much lighter. It's much easier to turn over. There's also not as much foam, whereas with the super shoes, and the reason I bring this up is I'm getting miles on the SC Elite 4 right now, which is a great shoe to do long runs in, like up-tempo runs, a marathon pace. That thing doesn't do anything fast enough for me. Like, I cannot – I have trouble pushing that shoe and being able to maintain that faster speed and changing paces. I'm wondering if that's because with so much more foam – there's more compression, right? And that compression takes time, right? It takes time to compress and to bounce back, which is going to do great over half, even 10K. 10K, half,
yeah, you're in a
full
rhythm,
marathon,
you're
A paces.
Go yeah. to sleep, just run your splits.
Right. Yep. But when it comes to like 5K, 1500, stuff like that, for people that are running at the paces that you are, like that really fast stuff, that makes sense. For the rest of us, like myself, for a 5K, it may not, you know, like road, stuff like that. It may just make more sense to have a super shoe. But when you're starting to go at those faster paces and how the shoe responds, how quickly the foam responds, how quickly it responds, makes more sense to me that, you know, maybe these super foams and this economy stuff doesn't make as much of an effect over these shorter distances. And, you know, that gives more flexibility into what foams you can use, how you set that stuff up. So there's other factors that are outside of my expertise in terms of how you design track spikes and things like that, because I just don't have enough experience do it, like, you know, using them for several years. I've got a couple that I've been able to review from like a fit performance standpoint, but I have my own limitations on that. But
yeah,
I totally
then, like,
get where you're going. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, devil's advocate to myself, I see guys like Dylan Jacobs, shout out Dylan Jacobs, like running in a Vaporfly on the track and having zero issues covering moves and kicking and doing things.
Right.
And then, like, some of the BYU boys before they made the stack height rule, like, they were also doing the same thing and ripping.
Yeah.
Like, Clayton Young was one of them. Like, he was there before the rule. And it's like, yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's interesting because I know when I'm kicking, I feel better in spikes. And that's a fair point too. The word kicking, right? Like, we're talking the last 800 meters, maybe probably less even. Like, you're kind of ramping it up, but true kicking is probably going to be somewhere between 1 and 400 meters, depending on where you're going, like truly going after it. And that's such a short period of your race. That's 12 and a half laps. That's one lap or less where you're actually at that point. And so that's another thing where it's like, does it actually matter? I don't know if it does. And that's a question I'm chewing on myself.
I will say, and this I need to give you credit for this because it's something you talked about, that to be devil's advocate on this, the opposite way to think about this is you talked about comfort. What's going to be most comfortable? What's going to keep you healthy and actually get you through the race? What can you actually control throughout the race? So this is my advocate. So someone like yourself that's been doing stuff in track spikes, I think for the last couple of weeks, correct?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Like four-ish weeks now, but not full workouts though. We're talking maybe second half of the workout, you know, you switch into them. So that way I can walk the next day.
Got it. You know, like, so this does apply to you because you said you're not sure can you handle track spikes for a 5K. So for the rest of us, especially those of us as we're starting to get a little bit older, and you know, David and I are still very young, but as you start getting into your mid, late 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s plus, you got to ask yourself what tool is actually going to get you through the race. So we often talk about this going the marathon distance. People are like, I want the fastest super shoe. It's like, yeah, the fastest shoe may not get you through the end of the race. I know 5K is not that long, but when you're talking about some of these super aggressive track spikes that are low, if not zero drop, if not negative drop sometimes, you got to ask yourself, can your calves handle that? So from an injury prevention and a finishing the race standpoint, that's something else to think about. Like myself, I would need several months to prep my body, even though I run in a lot of ultra and things like that. I would need several months to prepare if I was going to do a full 5K in track spikes, just because, yes, performance is one thing, but like you said, I want to be able to run and race the next week or so. I don't want to get injured. And that's something, you know, I'm not trying to scare people, but it's a thing is what, where is your limit too? And that goes in the opposite with super shoes. Like I said, is like, yes, it's the super fast feeling like max stack height shoe, but can you control that for a marathon distance? Sometimes the fastest shoe may not be the one that helps you achieve the highest performance, because your own body is the other thing that you need to consider, and that's individual.
I think the answer is I just get a Adidas Evo 1, get a 5-ounce super shoe, and there you go. It's the same weight as a track spike. You're fine.
Got it. So just every – so that the Evo 1 is the answer for both the track and marathon. Just forget it. Yeah, the $500 shoe that – that I'm still drilling over and mad.
If it lasts one marathon, that's how many 5Ks?
That's fair.
Or 10Ks?
Yeah, that should be more, right? Right?
Yeah.
Two, it, like what? How many 10Ks is that? Like
four 10Ks?
Four 10Ks, and that, so eight, like six to eight 5Ks or so? I'm going to be honest with the viewers. We haven't gotten our hands on that.
I wish.
And so we haven't tried it. So I'm a little bit annoyed, but so I keep looking at eBay going, oh, should I do this? And the whole team's like, don't do it. Don't do that.
It's not worth it. It'll come around eventually.
Eventually.
And then we could probably get it at not 500.
Right. Or I'll just like 2 years from now, buy it on sale and review it super late. But so the other conversation we were having, which really kind of stimulated us to go, you know what, we should do this as the main topic for the podcast, is how these super shoes are affecting our training.
Yeah.
Do you want to share the – well, should we be careful of who
yeah,
we
yeah,
name
no, no,
with
no,
this?
No, yeah. No names, no names, nothing.
No
nothing.
Names, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Share the story that kind of made this thing about this. Yeah.
It's not even names. It's something that I'm noticing across a larger scale across the elite and sub-elite audience. And that's probably anyone that's running from the range of 209 to, I don't know, let's say 216. And there's a lot of people. These shoes have been out long enough now, but recent enough to where you have a large enough population of people that have run marathons and half marathons before these shoes came out and after these shoes came out, and are still at a competitive age where you can't attribute it to age. You know, where it's not like, oh, well, they're 45. Of course, they're going to be running, you know, slower than they were when they were 28. You know, it's like, no, they're still in a very competitive age in their life. And a lot of people are running the same times. They're not getting that much better or worse, you know, and it's I'm trying to figure that out from a larger scale. And when I think of it, like from a training aspect standpoint, and I think it's a larger, you know, picture here. I almost think of going, I mean, we're obviously very science oriented and we want to try and figure out the whys of things, but I think of it down to the root, you know, you just keep asking why. And I go down the rabbit hole and I think,
I'm a PhD student, what I do.
Yeah. Yeah. And so
just kidding. Sorry.
When you look at performances, okay, so it's stagnant. Why is it stagnant? Well, what was the major shift? Okay. So people got faster initially, all of a sudden in 2017, everyone and their mother started breaking 220.
That's,
you know,
fair. Yeah.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden you give it 2 years and now everyone plateaus, you know, and some of them aren't running faster than what they were before. And I think to some degree it comes down to a physiologic adaptation standpoint. And this is, again, a rabbit hole. I'm talking out of my butt here, right? I don't have any data to actually back this. But,
and if you disagree, please comment below or email us, because this is just a conversation. We are thinking out loud. So please disagree with us if you want, because I'm with David on this, but we'll have a conversation. We'll see how this goes.
Yeah, but I think about this, right? And I think about, okay, so why is it plateauing? And let's look at some training principles here. And it's like, okay, so people are putting super shoes on more and more and more. And you wear them during your workout, great. You run a good workout. Let's just say you're a good responder. You are 4 to 5% more economic in a given shoe. And you feel good. You feel less beat up. And you're getting through your workouts. You're recovering. And you feel good. And you can keep that training cycle going over and over and over again. But when you look at some of the larger scale things, and they're when you look at the performances and they're not getting better, it's like, so why aren't they getting better? They feel better. they're responding to the workouts, and then they go through on race day and they're running the same exact thing. And I think to some degree, if the training impulse from a physiologic work side of things is now lower, you know, like you're not working as hard to hit those same paces, and you're getting really good at running those paces in that shoe, but then when push comes to shove, you're not able to actually shift that gear forward anymore. And so I don't know if it's better to do like a hybrid. Obviously, you want to put these shoes on before you actually use them. Like, I'm not saying don't wear super shoes, but
can I interject?
Yeah, there? Go for it.
Because Justin Matthias, who was nice enough to send up some of his research, and again, we referenced him a couple weeks ago, but hope his master's dissertation defense or thesis went well. Justin, keeping you in mind. But his study, although it was a small subject number, there's only two people that continued, I think, with the flat. It was comparing training for 8 weeks in flats versus super shoes and looking at economy differences and jump height and stuff like that. The two people that trained in flats had much larger overall economy improvements compared to those that were just in the super shoes. They also had, if I remember correctly, better maintenance of things like jump height and stuff like that, which was done without a super shoe versus those that were. That wasn't as good. You didn't have as big economy improvement. But at the very end, when you compare the two of them, the ones that were running in super shoes did best in the super shoes. They seem to adapt adapted best to them because that's now the environment or the tool that they are best at using. Those who maybe didn't respond as well because it's a new stimulus. So we're not saying don't use these, but just be aware that, yeah, if you want to use them, you do have to get used to them because they are very different than traditional shoes, or at least they used to be. I mean, things are starting to change a little bit, but
yeah, things are getting closer and closer. Yeah. The waters are getting more and more muddy.
Training shoe wise, yeah.
Yeah. But I just think there is something to be said for that because there's so many people. I mean, even down like our top Americans, what, 207 high, 208 low?
Yep.
That was the same case before super shoes.
Right.
Right. Like
or two people that could do that. Right. And like maybe there was a 206, like, you know, Ryan Hall or whomever was running 206.
Yeah. A special talent's going to go run sub 207 regardless.
Right.
Is how I feel, you know?
Yeah.
And when you look, I mean, sure, the masses have all gotten faster, but the masses have also plateaued. Right. Like there's a crap ton of guys that can run 210 to 215. But like there's not that many guys. Well, even 209, there's a lot of 209 guys, but like why aren't we going any faster, you know? And it's I honestly don't know, and this is not a shot at any of those guys. Like this is just the thinking process.
We're just asking questions
by all means. Hey, I want Connor Mance and Clayton Young and, you know, CJ Albertson. Like I want all these guys to go and run really, really fast, you know. But just looking at it objectively from the outside, it's just so interesting to like, why are we staying at this area, you know? And I don't know what their training looks like. I don't know how much they're in these shoes. Again, this is all speculation.
It is. Yeah.
But
we're making some very
strong assumptions. And I feel really bad for doing that. You know,
This has had a great conversation. Yeah,
I just don't want to take anything away from any of the athletes. You know me.
Yeah,
I'm always on the athlete's side.
Yeah.
Every single time. But at the same time, in order to get the most out of the athlete, I do kind of feel like if the shift with the shoes did increase performance that much, and let's say you are that much more economic in those shoes, maybe you do have to, if you are using those shoes in training a lot, maybe you do have to shift that training impulse to be faster and harder so that you get that work impulse on your body and actually create physiologic adaptations. Because if you're comfortable the whole time, at some point or another, you're going to have to push.
Right.
You know, if you're racing Eliud Kipchoge and he's going to go run a 202, 203 on you, and you're trying to be relevant in that race, and you've been practicing for 208, you know, it's like, well, good luck, right? Like,
yeah,
that's so much faster over such a large amount of time. It doesn't sound like much. You know, the jump between 3 flat and 250, you know, is something that a lot of people can make in, you know, a year, 2 years time. The shift from 210 to 2 flat is a whole nother story. The margin of error is so small and the paces only get faster. And so I don't know. I feel like from an adaptation standpoint, to really maximize what your body can do, you almost have to overtrain in something else and then switch into it. But I don't know. Like, you could
I see where you're going both ways.
I don't.
So what I think I'm hearing is, and we've talked about this before, super shoes don't make you faster. They allow you to hold paces for longer periods of time. And I think that goes back to the track spike comment where you're like, yeah, these feel great holding these paces forever, but if I really want to go, like, that track spike, right? Track spike training in those, that you can really turn over. It's the lighter weight, the better traction. The super, you're not going to take a track spike for a marathon, but so these shoes are designed to allow you to go longer. And from what I'm hearing, I think we think they increase your capacity. But if you increase your capacity this much, but you're only still training here, you're not going to get the same benefit. These shoes are protective. That's I need to be very careful with how I say that word. But because it makes you more economical, if you don't push to that maximal level, right, and you just push here, even if that's just as fast as you used to, you're not going to get the same stimulus as what you used to get doing these in non-super shoes. Your body still gets better in response to stimulus if you can recover from it. But it has to be enough that really challenges that. Less stimulus, less adaptation. So that would make sense. And I think we've talked about this before, that at some point you're going to adapt to the stimulus. That's why we were cautioning, right, going, yeah, these super shoes are great. I love them. Like, I've done –
I've got a whole wall. Like, is it in frame? Let me see. Yeah,
I've done
there we go.
More insane stuff in these shoes than I ever have. Like, I did a 10-mile run, and I had a 10-minute uphill tempo workout with the stroller this morning that almost killed me. And I just went and did the same thing before this. I would have never been able to do that in traditional shoes. But part of the reason I can do that is because I'm like, yeah, I still got energy from this morning. Let me go max this out. Is that very smart training-wise? I don't know. I'm not an elite runner. I'm just doing dumb stuff and seeing what's happening. But that got me thinking. Yeah, I'm a lab rat. I was like, that got me thinking, and this hopefully doesn't come off the wrong way. I'm not trying to be rude and saying we're not training hard enough. But if you give yourself something that makes you more economical, it's not free. It means if you want the stimulus to get faster, it actually means you have to push that much harder. And I was listening to an interview with Renata Canova. Hopefully I'm saying his name correctly. But he's a coach of a lot of these like super fast Kenyans. And somebody asked him, like, what do you think is the biggest difference between now and 30 years ago? And he goes, you know, there's a lot of things that have changed. Our understanding is training has improved. Nutrition has improved. Obviously, gear has improved. But one of the things that is just the clearest difference is these athletes are pushing harder and with more intensity than they ever have. And part of that might be some of the shoes allow them to do that, but they are running so fast. And what kind of struck me is he's like, yeah, these athletes are running like 99% of their marathon pace for almost a marathon every like 10 days to 2 weeks. That's insane. That means when they get to marathon day, they're like, yeah, I've done this all the time.
Exactly.
It's nothing new.
It's not a foreign experience. Yeah.
It's not a foreign experience. We are like, good luck staying with them, because then when they get that last like 105% that you can give during a race, then you're like, oh my gosh. So we really shouldn't be surprised when people are running like the recent guy with the Tokyo Marathon that ran 2:02. It's like, yeah, he probably does not far off that like 100 times. Like that's... Yeah. You know, but I think that's an example of, and I need to be very cautious when I say this, is some people are willing to take these things and push them to the absolute limit. And if you're hurting just as much as you did before, you're going to get the stimulus. But you have to realize that if you do the same thing as you did with the super shoes before, you may not experience as much improvement and you may plateau quicker because you're not, this is so rude. You're not pushing
you're not
as much as you used to.
Enough. Yeah,
you're not, and I'm not
hard,
meaning
yeah.
right. I'm not meaning to be rude, but I also wonder if it's not just, hey, are you pushing as hard as you are you pushing enough? Are we simplifying this? Maybe that's not the case. Maybe there is some level of adaptation that your body goes through. It's like, well, I don't need to, right? Like,
yeah, and you can make the case too, like, oh,
yeah,
well,
something
you're
in the
go
nervous
run.
System, yeah, something that like holds you back, or like, because I'm seeing, you're totally right, like. I've seen this and had a lot of athletes that I have talked to, non-elites, to go, yeah, I had such a huge boost when these shoes came out. Now I'm struggling to get faster, right? And there's lots of factors that go into this. I think what Dave and I are trying to get at is, and you correct me in just a second, is, you know, is the concept of maybe having some things to rotate through and really thinking about what's the point of this tool and being really specific with it important, which we're not going to do because we're shoe geeks and we're going to run in whatever and do stupid things. Well, I am. You're smarter than I am in gym training, but.
I'm laughing because our original episode was on shoe rotations.
I know. Maybe we should.
You're like, we're going to do a rotation. And then
we could. Should we go into that now? Like, no, go back to we find now. We'll save it. Yeah.
We don't need a 3-hour episode on our hands. 2-3 hours.
Speaking of which, before I have you go any farther, for those of you that have made it this far, 30 minutes into this episode. So we promised you we'd tell you that super secret. So we are partnering with Running Warehouse over the next several episodes and several weeks. And they've been gracious enough to provide us a couple $100 gift cards that we are going to be giving out each episode. So if you want to be entered in the raffle for one of these, please on YouTube, please comment below and you'll be automatically entered. So hey, just answer the subjective, give us a hard time, tell us we're wrong, do something, right? Enter in below and comment below and you'll be entered in to the raffle that we will happily give away to support all your running needs that we are causing. I'm just kidding. Yeah. Congrats if we made it this far through us geeking out.
But it's just an interesting concept, right? Yeah. Like, and I think, too, one thing with a lot of those, like, East African training groups, again, assumption, I don't live with them, I don't train with them, yeah, right? But so much of their runs are on, like, rolling dirt roads, and, like, they're working, you know? You see what they're doing. Like, they are not... You could run that easy, and that's still a solid run. Like some of the stuff I see, I'm like, holy crap, they're running that pace through that. And it's like, okay, now put them on a flat road, and they're going to run like it's not that hard, right? So I think some of it, too, is just literal training stimulus as well.
They when I was very fortunate before I left for PT school down in Southern California, when I came back from college, I probably told this story before, I came back to Portland in college, and while I was working at a couple running stores during that summer, I was very lucky that I met a couple guys from Kenya and Ethiopia who are running for Nike and Adidas, which are located, their U.S. headquarters are in Oregon. They were nice enough to say, hey, you want to tag along? And I was like, sure. And they were the absolute masters of knowing when to push and when not to. So I think they optimized that training stimulus because when we were running easy, it was like 8, 9, 10 minute pace. And these guys were all at that time, this is like a decade ago, they before Super Shoes were all like 205, 206, 207 guys running 8, 9, 10 minute pace on easy runs. But the second they did anything remotely hard, I got dusted. They were running so fast. And I was coming off being a sub 15 minute 5K, like 31 minute 10K guy in college. And I was like, you know, it's not the fastest, right? I'm not D1, but they would just crush me. And then when they need to run easy. And so part of that is, hey, how hard are you going? Like, are you maybe thinking about the watch too much? And somebody asked us the other day going, hey, do you train by watch or by effort? It's like, I'm an effort person. The watches there just be like, oh, that's interesting. But I think they've optimized like that training, the stimulus and recovery stuff really, really well. But that's a strong, like you said, we're not there. I've never been to Kenya, Ethiopia, or any other of the East African countries of people that are really excelling and being at like running 202. I don't know. I don't know if drugs are involved too. I know that's a big accusation right now.
Okay,
I have no idea. I know somebody's going to throw that out there in the YouTube comment. Not to take anything away, right? That happens in all sports. I don't know. Somebody's going to say that. I know. Doping.
Man, you know. That was not something I was ready for.
Comfortable, but I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know, right? It's amazing, the amazing feats of the human body. But
I'm
if you want to get to that
regardless
level,
regardless of the country or where anyone is, it's rampant in any endurance sport. So I guess there's always some speculation.
Yeah, I don't know. We're not there. We have no idea. But just curious, going back to the shoes, asking like, hey, you know, we always talk about shoes or tools, and how are we utilizing these tools if you want to optimize your performance? If not, don't ignore all of this. But if you're trying to optimize your performance, no matter if you're running a 30-minute 5K or a 12-minute, 12-and-a-half-minute 5K, it doesn't matter. It's still like – maybe it does. But, it, you know, how are we adapting this? How are we getting that? No, it doesn't matter because at the end of the day, we get better through stimulus and rest. Right. And the more you can optimize that, the higher you'll perform. And who knows what your limit is. Right.
So. Yeah. And that's not to say there's always some level of specificity. Right. Yeah. Like if you're going to go run a 12-something 5K in spikes, chances are you do a lot of spike work. Like, you feel comfortable running a 12-something in spikes on the 5K.
So I guess – so here's my question. If you had – because this goes back to David trying to decide, do you want to wear flats or spikes for this upcoming 5K? So if you had spikes and super shoes that both weighed the same amount, which would you choose?
Yeah, and that's a great question, right? Like, and I think it would depend on – I think it wouldn't be on the weight. I think it would be on how the shoe feels at the toe off. You know, like, how do I actually feel when I'm trying to push the pace? Because at some point or another, you're going to have to pick up the pace. You're going to have to respond to a move. Like, you're going off the line, like, you don't need to be urgent. And you watch 5Ks, a lot of times people just get off the line and, like, maybe they run fast for 50 meters and then everyone settles, right? Like, everyone just kind of settles into whatever the pace that race is going. So obviously, like, if you're running a 13 low, like, world-class 5K, for them, that's still a pretty comfortable pace, right? It's comfortable until it isn't. And that's how it is for any race. But, like, you watch them, they all look like they're jogging. They're fine, you know?
And must then, be nice.
Yeah, then you pass 2 miles, and then the real race begins, right? And so that's going to happen whether or not you're a 12-minute or 30-minute, right? Like you said. And it's really what happens in that third mile. And so that's the thing where I was thinking earlier, I was like, well, if I feel good, like if my calves are good and everything feels great in the third mile, maybe the super shoe is the answer. But if I really want to pick it up and I'm trying to be aggressive and I'm going and really leaning into the track and I feel clunky in the super shoe or something, like, then I'm going to really want that spike, right? Assuming my legs hold up and everything's equal, you know? So I don't know. It was just a thought bubble that popped up, and I figured we just make a little episode out of that. I don't know. I don't know my answer.
36 you know? Minutes later, a little episode.
I think the only way to truly respond to that is to have a pair of Evos, right? So if anyone's out there listening and wants to send me some Evos.
I'm saying David and I, Evo, will test this out. Yeah. Okay.
Evo once. Soft plug.
So, no. So what do you think – we also talked about this a little bit, but, you know, a lot of the spikes have changed too. Like this,
oh,
the
totally.
Spikes
of yes, yesteryear. Of course. We didn't even address that as much as
yeah, the spikes
we
of yesteryear, for those who use them,
well, here, grab them,
are not the same at all, right? Like,
I don't have any. I finally donated my Avantis, my original, like, before the Lightstrike Pro. I don't have them. I don't have my original.
And I gave one of your teammates my pair. I still have my.
Not the Lightstrike Pro one though, but the regular just straight up track spike.
The OG, like
the red on white. Do you remember the real bright cherry red? Yeah, like those ones.
The OGs.
I don't have them anymore. That's okay. Shame. I was wearing them in that picture right there. That was.
Yeah. Do you have the current some of your current track spikes right now?
Yeah, I've got a few. Let me just grab them. Do you know, is there an embargo on the one I showed you before the episode?
You didn't show me a track spike before the episode.
I did. I already talked about it. We just won't grab that one.
Yeah, that's fine.
Let me see here. All right, here we go.
I wonder if VJ is going to edit this part out or not. We'll find out. I'm curious.
There's one. There's another. Okay.
I mean Casper. Sorry.
Casper the Friendly Ghost strikes again. Saucony Terminal VT. Really solid spike. I think this, ironically, it's meant for like the distances, 5K, 10K. I think when I was in college, this could have been like an ideal 1500 spike for me.
Agreed.
I never really loved the really aggressive spikes. And so this, with how light it is, I mean, this thing's like high 3 ounces, I think. Like this is light. Like you pick this up, it doesn't feel like much. But it has good stack for the track spike world. Power on HG, that's in the Endorphin Elite. I'm not saying it, just objective. Adidas Avanti, Lightstrike Pro, you know, fits right at that world athletic stack height standard. A little bit heavier, a little less aggressive, a little more flexible. So for those that kind of want that, that's a good option.
That is classic Adidas track spike, by the way, like that. The Avanti, the Avanti's always been like that. A little bit heavier, almost like borderline of flat. That's okay.
Yeah. And then you have the dragonfly, so very clearly a spike, right, where it has that very spooned out kind of feel to it. But the Zoom X midsole is in it, and it, again, abides by World Athletic standards.
Oh, there's no embargo on the shoe we talked about.
No? No, there isn't?
No.
Okay.
No.
I'll grab it then.
You could buy it on their website.
Oh, sweet. Okay, cool. Yeah. I don't know. I'm the one that thinks about these things before I say
that's
things.
That's fair. I don't.
I'll put that out there. No.
It's on their website because I've stalked everyone's websites to see what's available.
New Balance MDX. So this has been out for a minute, but
yeah, it's been out for a while.
But here's a good thing right here. Spikes are aggressive, right? And so this is a middle distance spike. Yes, I've run in it, but it's very spooned out. You're very on your toes. It amazes me that people will run 5Ks in that. That is insane to me. People do. Yeah, Emma Coburn was racing the 3K steeple on this.
That's fair.
Yeah, yeah, like
that makes sense. Yeah.
Granted, she's probably got calves of steel.
Right. Yes.
But let me see. So the other one, and it kind of sparked the conversation because these were a recent acquisition. The Brooks Hyperion LD, Hyperion Elite LD, Hyperion LD, doesn't matter. But yeah, it's their long distance track spike. Obviously, Josh Kerr has been running quite well in it, but I think we were saying this before. I think Josh Kerr would run fast because he's Josh Kerr.
Yeah.
Regardless of what's on his foot. You know, again, always on the side of the athlete here. But
so that is – you're right. That is what stimulated the conversation because we're going, you know, how much are track spikes really impacting efficiency? You know, over a marathon distance, totally makes sense to have these shoes because efficiency
what actually sparked the conversation? It wasn't that. It was your eBay stalking habits.
Oh, yeah. My bad.
We should have a review out of this soon because Klein hounded on eBay.
Wow. Way to rat me out. I'm going to get in trouble. Nathan's going to get pissed. Yes. My eBay hunting, I found a pair of on the 10K spikes for $60 on eBay, LD, brand new. Whatever. And I like immediately pulled the trigger, wanted to try them, which I'm not supposed to do, but.
So that's actually what sparked all of this.
All right. Way to wrap me up. We'll find out if Nathan listens to this episode or not.
We're doing it live.
Yeah. So the question again was, hey, over these distances, you know, there's been a lot of changes in track spikes because now you got a lot of the super foams in them. They've moved away from PBAX plates to now a lot of carbon plates. Things are getting stiffer, higher stack height, again, with the 25 millimeter limit. But how much of that is really affecting times now? I will admit, I think they've been more comfortable, right? The increased cushioning there makes it a little bit easier. Although my calves feel just as worked, to be honest with you. They just feel a little bit more cushioned, a little less harsh than they used to. But
and it's tough because I don't know how much of that is not being trained up to being in spikes, right? Like, I don't know.
I think
this is showing its biggest impact, though, I think is in the 1500. And it's really interesting. So if anyone wants to go do a study and go get data on this, out of all of the events, when I look at the large improvements in times from a massive standpoint, the one event that doesn't seem to be touched very much is the 800.
Yeah, that's fair.
I feel like the standards to get into NCAAs, the standards to get into USAs, who's winning at what times and qualifying for Worlds, those times have stayed relatively consistent.
Right.
Somewhere between 143 and 145, that's always been the case.
Right. I would also argue for the 1500 that we've seen some pretty awesome indoor times, but overall, people are getting closer, but somebody ran that beat Hikmel Guruj's?
Well, that, no, but again, Guruj is going to run what Guruj runs, I think, regardless of what's on his foot. Like, I think those are the outliers. But I think when you look at the masses, it's like you look at University of Washington as 8 sub-4-milers.
That's
you look
fair.
At
yeah.
like the just the sheer amount. I forgot. I had the count on this like a while ago. But that Boston meet had like 40-something sub-4 miles.
Yeah. That's insane.
You know, that used to be special. When I was in college, that was special. That wasn't that long ago. You know what I mean?
Now like, I feel like, dude, you haven't broken 4? Like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, like it'd be like, oh, yeah, what'd you run? I don't know, 4-0-something? Oh, you're slow then. Like, it's just crazy how many people are running somewhere in that high 330, 1500 range. Or low 340 range, you know, or
But can we attribute that all to the shoes? To Devil's Advocate?
No,
can we attribute
I think a lot of it's training. I think a lot of it is programs. A lot of them come from the same programs, right? There's a lot more meets that facilitate this, where it's like, oh, you go there to run the 1500, or you go there, like Brian Clay, outdoor 1500 all day. You can be in heat six and run a fantastic 1500. And then it's like Boston, obviously, for the indoor mile. But so I do think there's other factors at play here. But I feel like these ultra responsive shoes, it's like you're the 1500 is a weird event where there's it's just long enough to where fatigue can still kind of play a factor, and mental fatigue and attentiveness and how you are within the race. I feel like the 800 is at that dividing point where it's like, if your body gives, it gives. You know, you go and run a 50-point first lap and then hang on for dear life the second lap. I don't know if it matters quite as much. And I think that's showing. You know what I mean? Like on the spikes, like your body's gas. Like you're literally maxing out. You're just shy of maxing out from the gun.
So you think that this makes a larger effect on the 1500 and 5K, but 800 is the kind of the gate where below that it's not any additional cushioning or things like that may not is probably not.
Yeah. And then look at the 400 times. Have the 400 times changed that much?
Well, I mean, to be fair, devil's advocate here, like the margin of error, the margin of like change.
Exactly. It's going to be smaller, right? But how many 43s are you seeing?
What's her name? Femke
Bol.
Yeah, who just broke her own.
Oh my goodness. I feel like Femke Bol, again, though, outlier. I think she's going to go run 49 regardless. Like, that's what I like. You look at someone like Sydney McLaughlin, she was around before some of the. And she's young, but she was around before some of these advancements in foams. And granted, she did run faster, but I think she was also getting faster. She was so young. Like, it's so hard to delineate that. But looking at someone who's older, let's say Dalila Muhammad in the same event, like her improvements were also small and marginal. So it's like, I don't know. It's so hard to say, right? Like, but I can't help but feel like the 1500, I don't know why, like I feel like the impacts are larger there.
Yeah. And why do you say that?
I think it's because,
not sure, but
I think it's a short enough distance to where no matter what, you're going to pick spikes. Right, you're pumping into the ground pretty hard running a 1500.
But those spikes have seen some significant changes over the years. Like even the 15, like the Nike. Oh my gosh, different colored pair. Why am I forgetting what the name of this spike is?
The Victory.
We all had the Victory. Yeah, sorry.
Like the Nike Victories, 3.2 ounces.
Yeah, like we all ran those. There was nothing there. There was like a little PBAX plate, and that was it. That was the only thing between your foot and the ground. And now we have all the
Dragonfly,
all these shoes have as much possible Zoom X or Lightstrike Pro or Power Run HE. They all have the max amount there. But
yeah, they've gained.
Has
weight.
That made a big difference?
I think it has. I mean, I think there's like, I don't know what else to attribute having 80 something guys run under a mark like when it's not special anymore, you know, people stop counting it. Like there used to be like a counter of how many, and they're like, I give up.
It was we don't count that high anymore. Yeah,
like University of Washington, was it like how many sub 4 miles could be at the Dempsey, right? And it was like that was a list, and it was under 100, so, if I remember correctly, when I was running. And it was like, now in a single year, you're going to have, not counting pros, you're going to have, you're going to have 60 plus in the same year, if not like closer to 80. And like, including pros, you're well over 100. So it's,
going to stimulus stuff. So we just talked about this with the super shoes. When it comes to super spikes, do you think some of those concepts that we talked about also apply? Going, hey, you know what? Makes you more economical. You're going to need to push hard to get the same stimulus. Do you think that also applies? Because these shoes
that's
are
a great question.
Even the same foams, but it's technically a different design.
I think it's – okay, that's a great question, because I think it is so much easier to hit race stimulus when you're working towards a 1500 as well. So much, right? If you're racing at sub 60 per lap, you got to run sub 60 per lap. Right. Like, and that's not going slow. If you've ever run a 400, like a sub 4 mile is very special. It still is to me, even though we just said that like everyone's doing it. but you still have to go run. Like, if you look at, go to your local 800, like go to your local high school meet and go look at how many guys run under 2 minutes in the 800. It's not that many. It still isn't. And it's like, as you get older, like you got to run under that 2 minute mark twice. Go to a college meet. Like, yes, there's going to be a lot of guys running under two flat. Like, they're in college. Like, now they're a little bit older. They have more competitive experience. But then again, like, they got to double that. The amount of, like, 157 to two flat guys you see is relatively high. But those guys are running more like 410 to 415 when it actually translates over to the 15. So it's like, I think even though the 800 times aren't seeing these giant jumps, let's say you take your 338 to 341 1500 or your 356 to four flat miler, they're not running 146 or 147. You know what I mean? Like the gap, and these margins are so small, right? But like, they're still running, I don't know, they're usually probably 152 guys, 151 guys. Like, and then if you look at the guys that are running even faster, like the 800, it's not shifting, is what I'm getting at. It's like, you're looking at these 350 milers, and you look at someone like Cole Hawker. What did he run? He ran 146, I think. That's actually really good. But I'm thinking like Centrowitz ran, what did he run? 148, 147, something like that.
I have no idea.
But the guy can run 350.
Yeah.
You know, and so I feel like when you start seeing these advancements, like, and oh, that's unfair too. Did he run that before Dragonflies? I got a history fact check my own self on that. But I just feel like the masses, like, I'm not seeing shifts in the shorter event, but I'm seeing for the same people. And you're seeing these massive jumps in the other. And I think it's easy to do 800, 1500 work and be a middle distance athlete and see big improvements in the 1500 and not see it as much in the 800. And maybe that means the 800 people have to train more like 400 people. I don't know. It worked for Donovan Brazier. I don't know if it, but obviously he's had plenty of injury issues himself and things like that. So I don't know where the tipping point is on that. This is all, again, I'm speaking out of my butt here, but
yeah, I'm going to take this to the to the recreational runner. Cause I feel like the average marathon time is still increasing. And part of the major thing is more people are participating
This
just than ever before, which is awesome. Like, people are active. They're doing marathons. It's awesome, right? This is more accessible. They have shoes that facilitates. It's more accessible. So I don't think everyone overall is getting faster. Just like I said, I think the shoes increase your capacity to do things, right? You can do stuff for, like, hold a pace for longer. And I think you're right that over the 800, especially with, even if you add some of these foams and these designs to, like, the spikes, I think you're right. Some of the shorter distance, it's not going to matter as much. And I will even say anecdotally, from looking at some data of some of the individual, like, people running road 5Ks, like your average road 5K, I don't think the times are that much faster. Kind of the winning times typically in the average place is still in your 17, 18 minute, unless you're in a faster area and you get that one 15 minute, you know, high school or college guy, or maybe post-collegiate guy occasionally. And then if you go to like a race with prize money or real stuff, you might see a 13 or 14 minute, right? Or US road championship. But a lot of the times I think are quite similar. Cause again, these shoes, I'm going to say it again, increase your capacity to do things for longer. They don't necessarily make you faster. And I think if you understand that, hopefully it helps you figure out training wise. If you really want to get faster, you have to train to be faster. Right. And that might mean either you got to run harder with these super shoes, or maybe you do some workouts without them, and that might give you a bigger stimulus. I don't know. Each person's going to be really different. Like, I'm harder than I ever, I mean, not including marathon stuff when I was doing it with my wife, I'm training harder than I ever have. And I don't know how much stimulus I'm getting. I'm just doing it because I need to test shoes. I need to get miles, and I like running fast, so I can do a double threshold. Is it because I'm training? No, I just want to see what happens. But I would never be able to do that.
I wish I was as bulletproof as you, man. This dude can take a hit.
Like, yeah. I do dumb stuff just because, and I would have never been able to do this in traditional flats. You know, I dabbled in some of the stuff in my life, but I never would have been able to do that stuff. I was beat up for days, whereas I could do this now in these shoes. It's not me. I'm definitely not better, but how that impacts me long term, we'll see. I don't know. I have no idea. And more people are talking about double thresholds. So
yeah, I think I was kind of getting at that with the 1500, and I never fully established that point. Was that that's just long enough for some of those fatigue resistant type properties and those shoes to kick in, where like, okay, you can hold that 59 for one more lap longer than you probably could have before. And that's the difference between 3-4 seconds on a race, depending how hard you're kicking, you know, if that 59 would have been a 62 or something like that. And I don't know, again, yeah. It's hard to look at those results and be like, why are so many people running faster? It'd be one thing if it was like, oh, okay, so the NCAA regional standard shifted 3 seconds, you know, and it's like, okay, well, 3 seconds is a lot, but that's, you know, I don't know, it's kind of reasonable. But at the same time, it's like people are just running stupidly fast. Like when I was in school, if you ran like 14.0, it's like, oh, you got a chance at making a regional. It's like now it's like, you got to run like 13:40 and you're still a bubble guy
for 5K. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that is insane.
I mean, this is anecdotal from what I've kind of watched, but like when we were in college, would you have ever thought about doing double workout days? Was that like ever a thing?
I don't know if I would have been opposed to it.
No, did you do that, or did you know about anybody really doing that?
Not really. We kind of not know. Like maybe we had like a short threshold thing, like in the morning, and then maybe some like sprint work in the afternoon. But not like
no, but like not like not true voluminous
workouts. Yeah. Like there wasn't anything. Never. No.
And I'm seeing that as I kind of just geek out and like look at the training of some of the collegiate athletes. They're doing stuff like that, and part of it is when they're on the they're using super shoes on the road, so they can do a hard workout in the morning, and then they can go do an insane track workout in the afternoon. And you're a collegiate athlete. So I think some programs are definitely maximizing the capacity with which these athletes are doing. How good that is long term, I don't know, whether they're going to burn out or not or what have you, or whether they're just getting better volume of athletes who have this incredible potential. And not every person's going to be able to do that. So it's a very strong blanket statement. But
yeah, and that's the same thing we're talking about.
They're training capacity, really ability freaking
to
hard.
Do work, getting that stimulus, right?
Yeah.
And if you can get more stimulus and recover, then you can adapt more.
Right. But to do that, you actually have to push into that limit still.
You have to put the work in. Yeah. And so we're just in a weird gray area right now where I think training volume and intensity is just like we're just hitting uncharted territory. I don't know.
So we don't know. Yeah.
And people are playing around and we're getting some fun results and we're seeing fast times and it's great. And I love
it. Fun. Yeah,
I'm just trying to figure out the why behind it. So that's like my ramble for the last, hour here. But
right.
Yeah.
That's okay. My last is just wondering like, hey, like with the capacity that we're pushing into, like, you know, I think some people are really maximizing and going all in, and we've got some really cool understanding of how sleep and nutrition really impacts this. Notice I didn't say anything about foam rollers or all that stuff. That can be some nice adjuncts that makes you feel better, but like sleep is being our sleep understanding's better, our nutrition is so much better understood, how we're recovering, like people are getting better, plus you add these things for the incredible ability to do work, I think is great. Just again, for the rest of us who aren't elite collegiate or elite athletes, ask yourself, you know, how am I getting the best stimulus out of this? How do I try to figure out how to get better if performance is your goal? If your performance is not your goal and you just want to run, like, go for it. You know,
there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. I feel like this whole episode, we've been talking performance related things.
We are geeking all day, I'll believe.
You want to go out and have fun and enjoy your run and have a great time at the race?
By all means, go
do that, please.
Like, go do that. Go train in super shoes all the time. We get it. We're not picking on you at all. We get it. But when it comes to like all out performance, right, that's where we're going. Hey, what's going on? Why we're seeing plateaus? Some places we're seeing insane performance, other places, what does that mean? So you let us know. Again, comment yes, because you could also win a $100 Runner Learning Warehouse gift card. But also comment because we're just curious to know what you think. We're talking and we're thinking and we want you to follow us along with that. So please comment below. Let us know what you think about this conversation, be it about the spikes, be it about the effects of super shoes, how that's working for you. If you are someone that's running in the super spikes, like what do you think? Do you think it's improving economy? And then for everyone else, you know, David's you know, in that elite level. I'm not, right? So like,
I don't know if I go that far.
You are now. So
these days, what, looking at that word, that's
I know, too much pressure. It's fine. Compared to me and the rest of us, right? So it's like, what do you think the long-term impacts of some of these shoes? And I don't think it's that a big of a deal anymore, because like we said earlier, we talked about this before, trainers are becoming super shoes. That's just how it is. Just curious to go, hey, as shoes increase our capacity, what do we need to do about it? So we'll comment below. Let us know your thoughts. We do read them if we don't respond to all of them, because a lot of people comment. But thanks as always for listening, and especially listening to us geek out. We totally didn't do the episode we planned to, which we'll just do there next week.
Just do it another time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be fine. Thanks for following along and letting us geek out.